Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's WrestleMania Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. This was a very interesting Raw, folks, because despite the fact that it was deemed WrestleMania Raw, there wasn't a ton of star power on this show. We did not see an appearance by John Cena. We did not see an appearance by Roman Reigns. We did not see an appearance by Charlotte Flair. We did not see an appearance by Bianca Belair. A lot of the champions were absent last night. But still, it managed, I think, to set the table for some of the WrestleMania matches that we'll be getting over the weekend. And it started out with a very unusual TV segment in which The Miz hosted Becky Lynch, Lita, and Trish Stratus. And really, it felt kind of weak to me. Becky Lynch was kind of trying to be cool and insulting to The Miz. And, you know, the whole tiny balls thing was over like a month ago. She's bringing it back up. I do think Lita did a pretty good job of saying, you know, when he said, how do you feel about being sort of just her hired goons and not really all that relevant. She said, well, I don't know. I'm half the tag team champions. I think that makes me relevant. Out comes Damage Control. And honest to God, I'm not trying to be, what's the right word for it? Because people get crazy when you mention anything about people's appearances. But they looked as though they hadn't slept in 6 weeks and they dressed in the dark. I don't know who backstage is making them up, but you're not doing them any favors. You're just not doing them any favors. They don't look like professional athletes. They look like groupies hanging around a Marilyn Manson concert. Not good. Not good. Now, what was good about this segment, however, is that Becky Lynch addressed the elephant in the room, which is she said, look, Io Sky, one of the greatest women's NXT champions of all time, Dakota Kai, look how much you've accomplished. What the hell have you done since you got here and you're under Bayley's thumb? Pretty much nothing. And sadly, that's kind of the truth. Bayley has not helped this team. The only way she's helped the team is to be able to actually speak for them because neither one of them can use the mic. So Bayley had to be the voice. But Bayley's mannerisms, her appearance, the way she's been booked, everything just screams this thing is over. And no matter how much you try to make this match feel like it's important, this match does not feel important to me. The importance of this match is that we're likely to see a Trish Stratus heel turn. But aside from a Trish Stratus heel turn, I see absolutely nothing in this match. Other than the fact that, you know, several of them are good to go. I don't know how much Lita can do. I don't know how much Trish Stratus can do. But the rest of them can go in the ring, certainly. But aside from that, does the match feel important? Does the match feel like it has an air of importance to it? No. No, it really doesn't. It feels like a special attraction. It feels like one of these things where you're like, oh, we get to see Trish and Lita. That'll be fun. And that's just about it. So this segment, coupled with Becky Lynch taking on Io Sky, lasted a full half hour. The one half hour was Ms. TV and Becky Lynch versus Io Sky. That's a long time. It's a very long time. I wasn't particularly enamored with the Miz segment. The Io Sky match was very good. Becky Lynch can certainly go. Io Sky, we know, can go. But all it really made me think of was, why are they sticking them in these tag teams and damage control when they can do so much more on their own? Io Sky on her own would be a million times better. We'd get a million times more better matches. Dakota Kai, we'd get a million times better matches. And then it hit me. The reason they're doing it is they can't talk on the mic. And in the WWE, it is crucially important that you can talk on the mic. Much more than NXT. Much, much more than NXT. And they have no way of connecting with the fans. So I guess that's what they figure. But, you know, when it comes to actual ring, in-ring performance, we could be getting a lot better matches than we are. So an interesting opening segment, Mike, but not one that I thought was overly effective, really.
Right, and that's the thing. It, without stretch, I'll say this, though. And I've said it before. When the Miz decides to hang him up, he's going to be missed. This guy, I mean, basically, he was the one who was carrying that segment. Yeah, you had Becky Lynch and you had Leland Trish there. But basically, the Miz was carrying that the pre-match segment, right? The guy is excellent at what he does. He's for somebody who's so good, he's underrated at what he does, you know. And look, he actually acted like a face. This Miz TV segment, he acted like a face because he played to the crowd when he did the whole Miz TV, when my hand goes up, your mouth goes shut, whatever that type of stuff is. He did that, and he allowed them to respond. He's good at what he does, and you're right about, I mean, look, there's a difference between, yeah, Asuka can't speak the language, but her body language, she speaks it better than Io Sky, and her body language is excellent, and her personality, you can see it. The problem with if Io Sky had the same or near the same personality as Asuka, it wouldn't be a problem because, you know, but she doesn't. She doesn't have that type of personality that Asuka has.
No. Yeah, Asuka has that rare sort of charisma that you don't really need to talk on the mic much to get through what you're saying. And again, I just, you know, damage control feels really old to me. They come out and I'm not trying to pick on people, but, and if they were male, I'd say the same thing. So don't give me the misogyny thing, but they look like they were auditioning for Hocus Pocus 3. I mean, really, Bailey looked like she just got up. Like somebody woke her up in the back of a van and said, "It's your hurry up, you're on." Oh shit. I don't know. It's not working for me at all. It's not working for me at all. My hope is that this match ends damage control. Get Bailey back to doing something else. Get Io Sky and Dakota Kai doing something else and forget about it. It's an experiment that really isn't working, Tom.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. It's kind of sad because damage control could have been, or more importantly, more accurately, should be at the top of their game right now because they had a ton of impact coming in and they just lost it. And the big reason is Bailey. Bailey is not into it anymore. I think it lasted a couple of months, and it's just they're kind of going through the motions, which is sad because Bailey is very good at what she does, and it's a shame because all three of them are good. All three of them can go in the ring, but you're absolutely correct where if they even put the two others on their own, they cannot do a promo. Here's the thing, here's where I say it would be to the benefit of the WWE, knowing that they have a relationship with New Japan, bring somebody in that could be a spokesperson, you know, somebody different that can speak for Io Sky. Not so much Dakota Kai, she speaks English, obviously, but bring in somebody that can speak for Io Sky. Bring somebody in that can speak for Asuka if needed. Representative of the Japanese wrestlers in the WWE. That would,
you know, I don't even think it's worth doing because I don't think Dakota Kai even belongs teaming with Io Sky. Let's just let them go out on their own. This damage control thing would have been good if it was too. I don't want to say that they're not accomplished because they are accomplished, but it would have had to been two different wrestlers. I could argue that if Bailey was leading a pack of two really hard-hitting female wrestlers, you'd say, oh, well, that's a major faction. It never felt like a major faction. It just never felt like a major faction to me. So, Todd, I don't know. Past WrestleMania, I'm hoping that we see the end of damage control and let them just, you know, go out on their own and see what they can do that way.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this damage control thing was not working when it first started with this almost a year ago. You know, like you said, this thing with Bailey, I don't think she's good as a heel in the first place. They should have kept her as a face, as the old Bailey, and just maybe after this WrestleMania, maybe just end up just breaking those three up.
Might be the best thing. Now, the other thing I want to mention about this is somebody got to put a word in Becky Lynch's ear that it's okay to breathe through your nose when you're talking. Because I'm tired of her making weird noises when she's trying to actually talk. She's literally like, and then you went to, and I'm like, what are you doing? Why are you sucking air through your larynx when you're talking? You can distinctly hear her sucking in air through her mouth while she's talking. And it's annoying. Every other word is cut by it sounds like she's asthmatic and she's having an attack. Someone really needs to tell her that's not really pleasant to listen to. And it's not being passionate. It's not. It doesn't come across as being passionate. It comes across as almost having an asthma attack, Mike, and it's hard to listen to.
Yeah, and that's sad. She above all these women should know that, and that's the thing. And you're right earlier when you talked about Bailey and how they have her made up and all that stuff and what she looks like. You take a look at like Britt Baker and all these people in AEW, and we know for a fact that Rebel does a lot of the makeup for a lot of the women in the AEW, right? Rebel does.
Yes.
And so we know that, and we can see it because every time Britt Baker comes out there, every time most of those women come out there, they look like they belong there. They look really, really good, right? I mean,
yeah.
Who's doing Bailey's makeup? Who's doing it?
I have no idea. I'm guessing Stevie Wonder, because it's not looking good. I'm telling you, it's they look like a motley crew, for sure. Anyway, Seth Rollins backstage is being interviewed, and Mustafa Ali with his new positivity thing comes out, and I'm not sure I like it because, once again, you know, he's trying to tell Seth Rollins this, that, and the other thing. And then when Seth Rollins basically tells him, well, remember when you wanted a match against me? Ali's like, oh, that was a long time ago. I really don't want to. Well, what do you mean you really don't want to? What are you in the WWE for if not to attempt to raise yourself to the top? And why would you not want a match on Monday Night Raw with one of the top, if not the top guys on Monday Night Raw? Why would you not want that? So whoever wrote that segment is an idiot because, of course, Mustafa Ali, whether he thought he was going to win or lose is irrelevant. He literally is getting airtime. He's literally getting a match with one of the top guys, and he's supposed to be like, no, I don't want it. Well, then what are you there for? I showed up just to walk around backstage and tell people what to do. I mean, come on, folks. You can write better than this. You can write better than this. I thought he was trying to goad him into a match, which would have been good, because then even if he lost, I would have said, well, at least he's doing the right thing, though. He's trying to goad people into making him famous by he keeps annoying them so much that they say, well, let's have a match, and then he's on TV all the time, which is pretty ingenious. He might not be winning, but he's getting a ton of TV time. No, it's just the opposite. It's like, oh, Ali doesn't want to wrestle. Okay, well, then I don't know why he showed up at Monday Night Raw. Not a good look there. I don't know what's going on with that. We got a weird sort of a promo with Austin Theory that makes me think he's not winning. I hate to say it, but I don't think you can call John Cena out like that and then expect that he's actually going to win. So I suspect shenanigans at WrestleMania that we'll get to on Friday. Anyway, Seth Rollins, Mustafa Ali, very quick match. I see that they're not going to do very much at all with Mustafa Ali, even with this new gimmick. I just don't understand the point, Tom, of having Ali backstage and then not wanting to wrestle when he's called out by a guy who will give him a spotlight on a major show.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. The instant thing that I thought of, and you're telling me, but I don't care. The instant thing I thought of when he started doing the positive Ali thing was Bo Dallas and his Believe thing. If they bring Bo Dallas back to team with Ali, it's, oh, God. I don't know if that's going to be good or bad, honestly, but that's the instant thing I thought of.
I can understand his character, but then what I'd like to see from his character, Mike, is him really being positive and saying, like when Seth Rollins says, how about we have a match? Yes, I knew I could get a match out of you. More TV time for me. Positive Ali strikes again, you know? And then he goes out there and loses. And the gimmick is, how long can you be positive when you're getting your ass kicked every week? Instead, it just feels like he doesn't want to be a wrestler. I mean, who wouldn't want? If you said, hey, anybody in the locker room want to have a match with Seth Rollins on Monday Night Raw tonight, I don't think you'd have too many people who would turn that down. So it's just a weird segment.
It is a weird segment. And frankly, if they work this thing right, they could absolutely, you know, work in to this thing with work into it the New Day. I mean, positive, the power of positivity, positive
right,
Ali, that is a tailor-made thing if they finessed it right, if they did it right. Now, as far as the other thing in it, Seth Rollins is over. The guy, I mean, how long did he stand there in the ring conducting the audience?
That's what I mean. Seth Rollins is super over. And he did the right thing, by the way, too, this week. Remember last week we said, I'm tired of the cartoonish, like, Joker thing where he's just laughing all the time and saying, Logan Paul, at this stage, you should be serious and say, okay, I've had enough of this. You know, all whatever, showmanship aside. The guy's an idiot, and I'm tired of him. Well, that's kind of what he did this week. So I was glad to see that. But, yeah, Seth Rollins is hugely over, and that's my point. If you want to make Ali this positive character, at least make it make sense, where he is saying it's a positive thing that I get a match with Seth Rollins and I get airtime. Even if I lose, I sort of win. Instead, you're sort of making him like, well, I don't want to wrestle. I'm a complete coward. I'm just backstage telling other people what to do, but I don't care if I ever get in a ring. Well, what do you mean? You're a professional wrestler. So I'm not sure I like the gimmick. I'm not sure I like where it's going. Anyway, the Austin Theory thing was, you know, he did it to an empty arena. It is what it is. We then got the Street Profits, Braun Strowman, and Ricochet against the Viking Raiders and the Alpha Academy. And I expected very little. I'm going to be honest with you. When this match came on, I said, we'll see. expecting Otis to walk out halfway through because of the maximum male models and probably cost his team the match. And I'm expecting it to be too short to really make any impact. And I was wrong. This was a good match. This was a good match, and I'll tell you something that I liked about it very well. Number one, you want to talk about highlighting Chad Gable. Chad Gable worked with almost everybody in this match that he could possibly work with and had great segments with him. Chad Gable is really, you know, a special talent. There's no question about it. But I have to give props to somebody I never give props to, and that's Braun Strowman, because Braun Strowman really doesn't like to show weakness. Braun Strowman's, you know, I'm the monster among monsters or whatever it is, and nobody can knock me down. Nobody can really. He took a shoulder block from Otis that looked like, made Otis look like a bazillion dollars. Really did. Otis returned the favor later when he did the Strowman train thing, and Otis went over the table. But, man, oh, man, I haven't seen Strowman sell like that in a long time. Montez Ford looks fantastic. Angelo Dawkins is beginning to look really good, too. You know, Angelo Dawkins, I think, got the message that Montez Ford might be going solo, and I better up my game, because Angelo Dawkins looked really good in this match. Everybody looked. I felt bad for the Viking Raiders because you've just basically gave them this new gimmick with Valhalla, and they're supposed to be these, you know, hard-to-beat Viking warriors, and they're just counting the ring lights now all the time. They're not going anywhere. The whole gimmick's not going anywhere. But overall, the match was really good, and I was actually pleasantly surprised with how well it went, Tom.
Yeah, and let me tell you what. I mean, Chad Gable might be my new favorite wrestler, to be honest, because he's just amazing at what he does. He can work with – it looks like he just worked with just about anybody and make the – even if they're not good – he makes them look really good. And I have to also agree with you with Braun Strowman taking that shoulder block from Otis. That was amazing.
I was shocked he did it. I mean, to that extent. It looked, you know, I hate to say it looked real, but that's what it looked like. It looked like he just took one hell of a shot from a guy that size. It makes Otis look good. Now, yeah, Maxine's watching backstage and the whole thing, you know, that thing's continuing. But at least they didn't have Otis walk out this time. It went to a conclusion. It was better than I thought it was going to be, Mike, but I think the highlights of this match was Chad Gable, and then to a lesser extent, probably Angelo Dawkins.
Yeah, and you look at Otis and you look at Strowman, they're about the same size. Maybe Otis has, you know, 20 pounds on him, maybe. You know, they're about the same size. So both guys about the same size, you would expect Otis to be able to knock, you know, shoulder block Strowman. I mean, yeah, Strowman's, what, 6'9", right?
Right.
And Otis is 5'10". But they're about – weight-wise, they're about the same weight, right? So you would expect that's the exact thing you would expect to happen is you get hit with a shoulder block, even though you're about the same size, you get hit with a shoulder block by the guy that's about the same size, you're going to go flying, right? You're going to go down.
Yes, the thing is, I've seen Strowman, you know, do these shoulder block things with people, his weight and size, like Drew McIntyre and some other people, even Bobby Lashley and people, and really not go anywhere. So I was kind of surprised. I was like, whoa, you know, he definitely sold Otis's power, which is a good thing. Aside from that, you know, were the fans really into it? I guess they were to an extent, but I think they were drawn into it. I think at first they were like, oh, whatever, this isn't going to be very good, sort of like what I thought. But the match itself came about in such a way that I think they got into it later. Somebody has to lose, obviously, and, you know, I guess it's the Viking Raiders, but all in all, I think it made everybody look better in the ring, and I guess you can't ask for more than that. Caller, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good.
So what's your thoughts on the eight-man tag?
Yeah, I think it was a good match. I think it was
you know, I think it's a group of guys that need to kind of break away and I think kind of have a little bit of a separate push. I really thought Ford after the chamber would get a push. I thought he was really fantastic in that match. And again, I mean, I think just on like a separate note, the thing I'm really looking for here, which is what I haven't heard that much of, is after Mania, I think we're finally going to actually see kind of like how much is Vince back versus is he not, right? Because I think right now what you're seeing is some of these angles that I think were very strong for a bit are having slightly weaker endings. I think you can certainly talk about how they've built up to all these matches over a lot of months. And so I think once the deck is wiped clean, I think we're really going to be able to see, is this Triple H still at the helm here or is Vince back? Because I think there's a lot of hints that, you know, from the Austin Theory empty arena promo to protect him to a lot of these backstage vignettes to putting the tag titles on Lita and Glad. There's a lot of, to Omos and Lesnar, there's a lot of hints that he's filled in all the gaps of things that were not booked with kind of classic Vince McMahon stuff. So I'm really curious to see what happens when the deck is officially
booked. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that Vince McMahon still has his hand in creative. And if you listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that the minute he resigned, I said, this is the same thing as a baseball manager being kicked out of the game. If you think they're still not managing the team, then you're terribly naive, because of course they are. And he may have let Triple H have a, you know, have his reign and say, you do what you want for a while. I'm going to take a little short time off. But you knew he was going to come back, and you knew he was going to give his impressions on this. And, you know, listen, it's his company. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? It's his company. You know, it's his toys to play with. So we got a weird Brock Lesnar and almost weigh-in that was not a weigh-in. Almost got weighed in, and then Brock Lesnar came out and tried to attack him with the scale, and that didn't work. And, God, that just – when I say it didn't work, it did not only work that Brock Lesnar didn't hit him with the scale. It didn't work as a segment. It was really bad. And you may as well just underline in magic marker in as many colors as you can get out of the package that Brock Lesnar is winning. Because there's no way Brock Lesnar looks bad 2 weeks in a row and then says, and then on top of that, I'm losing in 3 minutes. I don't see that happening. If he does, then you're not seeing Brock Lesnar. Because Brock Lesnar's not about to show ass like that 2 weeks in a row and not get any revenge at all at WrestleMania. It's just not going to happen. So I hate when the WWE does that, because it's just like writing the results in front of your face normally. So that was a weak segment. Nothing really to talk about. Here's what I do like. I don't know what happened to Carmella, but Chelsea Green apparently has a different tag team partner every week. And even though the crowd zero responded to this match with Mia Yim and Chelsea Green and Sonya Deville versus Mia Yim and Candice LeRae, crowd was dead silent. Still say Chelsea Green is beginning to look like a star. I like her outfit. I like her mannerism. I like the whole thing she's doing. It actually could work. And she's better than most people think in the ring, too. So if you gave her some time and didn't say it's 3 minutes and out, you'd probably see she could work a good match. I don't like Sonya Deville. I don't know why. I know she's a legit, you know, MMA-type person and everything, but, man, her personality grows tiresome immediately, and it's not even good heat. It's go-away heat. But it is what it is. I feel sorry for Mia Yim. I mean, she came in as, oh, she's going to be the OC's answer to Rhea Ripley, and now she's just counting the ring lights every single week, which I told everybody was going to happen when AJ got hurt. I knew that was what was going to happen. I told you that was going to happen with Anderson and Gallows, too. And now they're backstage, seeing if they're in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which is damn sad. Damn sad. I don't know. I like Chelsea Green, Tom. I think she has a future in the WWE if they give her some time to work.
I'm starting to really like her gimmick because it's really true to life. The fact that she said she was going to break her foot off in his behind. That was pretty. That was actually pretty funny, and Sonya Deville saying don't attempt to mansplain to me. That was actually pretty funny, but
right.
Yeah, everything she does in the ring is you got to give her more time because you could see that she has a lot more potential than they're showcasing.
Yeah, she had a good look too about her. My favorite gimmick, as far as her is concerned, as far as this gimmick is concerned, is that she talks to Adam Pearce every week and still doesn't realize he's Adam Pearce. She still says, "I want to talk to the guy in charge and stuff." He's so inconsequential that she just doesn't even remember his face week to week. That's actually pretty funny. I don't know how long, I don't know how many, you know, legs this is going to have, but you could slide her into, you know, modifying that angle a little bit as time goes on, and she's a good worker. So I think she's got a future here if they give her some time, Mike.
Yeah, and especially if they end up bringing in her husband again.
And they will.
And so we'll see what happens with that. And yeah, I mean, look, you give her something meaty to do, and she can do it. I mean, think about it. When she was Laurel Van Ness,
yeah,
and doing that old crazy bride,
yep,
crazy this, that, and the other thing, it the crowd bought it because she did it. She did it so well. She's good enough in the ring. She's a good enough actress.
Yeah.
She did it so well that the fans bought it and they bought into it, you know?
Yeah, you're right. She's not a one-trick pony. She can do other things, which is good. All right, let's get to Rey Mysterio versus Damian Priest. I got to tell you, Dominic has really launched himself. I don't know how much heat he's going to have after WrestleMania, but man, oh man, does he have nuclear heat now. And whoever's writing his stuff is really good because you couldn't ask for anything better than to have Dominic come out after begging Rey Mysterio to hit him for months and say, what kind of a father hits his own son? Classic heel mentality, and the fans just hate him. I mean, they just hate him. And the funny thing is, they hate him so badly, it's actually given a resurgence to Rey Mysterio's popularity that had kind of waned because people figured, yes, he's a legend. He's on the last years of his career. We love him, but he's not going anywhere. They're not going to give him anything meaty to do. He's just a guy that's going to be around the WWE. Now you've given the fans a reason to cheer for him, and it's rejuvenated his popularity. Fans pop huge now when Rey comes out. I knew the thing with Damian Priest wasn't going to go anywhere. I knew he wasn't going to pin Damian Priest. They don't want to totally destroy Damian Priest just yet. So I knew Dominic was going to interfere, but listen, that's the right move still. It's still the right move. Now, as far as El Legado del Fantasma coming down, you know, that ship has sailed. These guys just don't have the popularity. You didn't flesh them out individually. Santos Escobar, you may have fleshed out a little bit. These other two guys, they may as well be just local talent. I don't even know who the hell they are. I mean, I do because I watch NXT. But if I'm a normal fan just sitting there, I'm like, I don't even know their names. You've never given them any chance to have a microphone, to have a solo match, to have any kind of interactions that we know who they are. So they're just like, oh, yeah, those are two guys that come out with Santos Escobar. That's a mistake. If you really want those guys to be somebody, you got to flesh them out. And you haven't done that at all. But, man, you cannot deny the nuclear heat of Dominic Mysterio caller. But then again, will it last after WrestleMania?
Will it last? That's the question of the hour. But I will say, I'm going to appreciate it while it's here, because if you gave me, you know, 100 bets on what would happen in 2023, Dominic, a Mysterio being like a top two hottest heel in the company, would have been pretty
yeah.
low on the list. So, I mean, once he stops feuding with Rey, I don't know. But I will say, I'm actually like, pretty impressed with him. He's super hateable. I think the convict angle with him, where he's like this spoiled kid who pretends like he's like a hard convict, is kind of funny. I think he's been pretty good. And like, weirdly, I actually do think there's something here. I think the best way to think about him, if you're thinking about it in like a basketball terms or something, he's never going to be the first, second, or third best player on your team, but he's kind of like a heat check guy who can come in off the bench and randomly score 30 points and like win you a game. I do actually think he has a role in the company as someone who can occasionally become so hated that he carries a show for a month or something. I actually think he has something.
Yeah, I do too. And I'll tell you, the convict thing I thought would ruin him, because I said, oh my God, they're going to go for comedy. And you don't want to make him a comedic character. But no, they were able to transpose that into sort of a hypocritical, everybody in the world knows you didn't serve hard time and you're still acting like you did because you spent a night in jail. You know, there are kids like that. That's the thing. There are kids, I've had a hard life, while they're living, you know, in their $500,000 psychiatrist dad's home. I grew up and I only had, you know, I only had a PlayStation 5. I didn't have every system. We know kids like that. The thing about Dominic, though, was from the minute he showed up as a face, he was someone who had an incredibly punchable mannerism about him. He was someone that you were just like, man, I don't know. He has a very punchable face. And they took full advantage of that. But he's starting to get better on the mic. See, that was sort of his weak spot, is he doesn't sell himself that well on the mic. He's getting a lot better. You've given him some time, starting to really get good at it. And now he knows what buttons to push. My problem is he's always pushing that button of, like, nepotism and family. And you can't do that after WrestleMania if you're going to move on. So they're going to have to modify something there. Truthfully, I hope. If they think there's something in Dominic, he's got to get away from the Judgment Day, go with Rhea Ripley by herself. We don't need Finn Balor turning into the Demon and Damian Priest not knowing whether he's in a Latino street gang or he's going to go shopping at Hot Topic. I'm tired of that. They don't fit. Get them out of there. Let them go do their own thing, and they'll be much better off. Now, I do think the WWE probably has this long-term thing in mind where, again, I've said and I've called for it, if I had a fantasy booking, Rey Mysterio loses at WrestleMania. Kind of looks like maybe he let Dominic win. Dominic goes nutso for months saying, I'm the guy who retired Rey Mysterio, the legend. I'm this, I'm that, I'm the other thing. Let him get through Escobar. Let him get through all these other people. Eventually at SummerSlam, have Rey Mysterio say, you know, here's a newsflash for you, son. I let you win. I let you have your WrestleMania moment because I am a good father. And, of course, then Dominic would say, you're a liar, you're a coward, you just don't want to admit I'm better, which leads to one final match, right? I would imagine that's where the WWE is going to go with it. If they do, got to be careful. I don't think if you flip them face later on and they have this tearful reunion, I don't think Dominic's going to be popular. Not right now. I think he's a heel, and he's a heat magnet as a heel. Don't fix it if it ain't broke. Right now it's not broke, Todd, but Dominic's really doing his job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right there. Like you said, when Dominic first turned heel on his dad and Edge back in Clash at the Castle last year, excuse me, and he looks like he sort of hesitated when he first turned heel. Like, should I turn heel or not?
Yeah.
And now he's getting it. And, well, like you said.
Yeah, he's getting it, and the fans are eating it up. You can't beat that kind of heat, Tom. I mean, you got to try to keep this ball rolling somehow.
You know what I really dug about this segment is that I don't know if anybody is fluent in Spanish, but I am. And normally the fans would be going, what? What?
Right.
And they That was the ultimate sign of respect. Like, they were almost trying to understand what he was saying. Like, they were paying attention to what he was saying, even though it was Spanish. I don't know if there was people in the audience that you know, understood. But the ultimate sign of respect that they like him that they they're liking the angle is that they let him speak in his language without saying the what thing, which I thought was...
Yeah, they're not shouting him down. Now, what were they, in Arizona, were they? So there's maybe a heavy Latino contingent there. But nonetheless, you're right. When they don't like you, they tend to just wat you to death. They don't do that to Dominic. They boo him, but they don't wat him to death, which is, you're right, it's a sign of the angles going over. Gunther come out, gonna fight poor Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler has become probably the most talented jabroni maybe in the history of the WWE. He's a guy that even at his age probably would be very, very high up in other federations, and he's just decided this is where I'm going to plant my flag and stay, I guess. Always loved Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler's good at whatever role you give him. He's good at this too. Gunther is a great heel, but you got to minimize his mic time because he is not good on the mic. He is just not. And the more he talks, the less you hate him, and I don't think that's a good thing. I think it's pretty damn obvious that they're going to be setting up a Gunther-Cody Rhodes thing after WrestleMania, caller.
A Gunther-Cody Rhodes angle after WrestleMania, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be an interesting first match. To be honest, that's the first time I've actually thought about where Cody Rhodes would go after Mania. I would assume Reigns disappears till SummerSlam would be my guess, or around that. And actually, you know what's really strange, right? For so many years, there were no baby faces. And there were only strong heels. And we might actually be heading for the first time in a while where there's not really very many strong heels that can step in. And there's a couple strong, and it's actually flipped. So I think we'll kind of see where it goes. I would say Gunther's probably up there with the strongest secondary babyface. But at this point on the babyface side, you have Owens.
No, I agree with you. Gunther's one of their strongest heels. And if you remember, it was Cody Rhodes who threw Gunther out of the Royal Rumble. And that's when I first started getting the hint of, well, if Cody wins at WrestleMania and Roman goes bye-bye for a while, he's going to need a feud. He's going to have to get rid of that belt, though, and they're not going to want him to get pinned because that would weaken him. And now, lo and behold, we have a three-way dance where he doesn't have to get pinned to lose that title, and he could move on to face Cody Rhodes, which seems to make sense to me, Mike.
It makes sense to me as well, and that's the thing. Now, as far as just one other thing about the Dominic thing, we know where this thing with Rhea and Rhea, we have a good idea where this thing with Rhea and Charlotte's going to be going. And at some point, we've said this before, Andrade's coming back.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Andrade and Charlotte versus Rhea and Dominic.
Yep.
Or else they wouldn't have allowed Charlotte to say, well, I've got me a Latino lover as well. You know? So
yeah.
That's going to happen. But as far as Gunther, yeah, that's, when he threw him out of that battle royal, that should have ran it up the flagpole that this is going to happen. And we know that he's going to Roman wants some time off, and they could easily give Roman 3 months off, whatever it is, and then have him come back and beat Cody for the title again. You know, and
oh, they certainly could, and I think they got a Cody Rhodes problem because I don't know if you noticed this. But Cody got a pretty good reaction live. But when he was backstage, and you can usually hear the sound of the audience, you know, and they'll pop when, oh, I'm here with Seth Rollins. And now all of a sudden you can hear people singing his song or cheering. When Cody Rhodes said, I'm going to be the next WWE Universal Champion, I didn't hear much reaction. And I'm like, uh-oh. See, this is the thing. I think Cody Rhodes' pop is artificial because I think it's based upon the fact that the fans really love Sami Zayn, and they thought Roman Reigns did Sami Zayn wrong, so whoever is going to take out Roman Reigns is okay by them, and it just happens to be Cody. I don't know what's going to happen. after this angle's complete. Can Cody maintain that popularity? I don't know. I don't know. Because every time I see Cody Rhodes, and I don't know why, maybe it's just me. Every time I hear Cody Rhodes talk, I keep thinking to myself, disingenuous heel. Disingenuous heel. And I just think he would make the ultimate disingenuous heel. I mean, he's such an oxymoron of different things. I'm the American Nightmare. Well, what does an American Nightmare mean? What is that supposed to mean exactly? I know it's an offshoot of American Dream. I get it. But American Nightmare, are you saying I'm an American and I'm a nightmare to beat? Okay, well, but you're coming out in a suit. Like you're an executive. And then you're coming out to a kind of a ditzy pop punk song that like somebody that's 21 would come out to. And it doesn't have anything to do with your name or your – I don't know. It just – everything about Cody Rhodes to me screams, used car salesman trying to sell you a lemon. And I don't know, caller, can he maintain this can he maintain this popularity after WrestleMania, even if he becomes the champion?
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I feel like everything about Cody Rhodes makes me feel like the liking him aspect is short-lived. Like, even just down to, like, just the suits is not a babyface outfit. You know, like, the way he dresses is not, you know, like a babyface thing. And the way he talks, you can see this flipping and getting old from a babyface side relatively quickly. And to be honest, I actually think Cody Rhodes would be such a great heel. So I don't necessarily find this to be a bad thing. In fact, I think if he does start to get booed, it'll actually accelerate how big of a star he can be in the company, because I'm with you. The babyface promos he gives, just something in the back of my mind is just like, oh, this is okay for now. I'm surprised people are still cheering for this, but like, it feels temporary.
You go to the used car lot and the guy's like, oh, I can see you're a very smart car shopper and you know a good deal when you see one, and boy, do I have one for you. That's what it reminds me. I don't get sincerity from him. I wish I did. Like, Sami Zayn is such a good actor. I get sincerity from him. You know what I mean? Like, when he says something, I'm like, it sounds like he believes it. I don't get that from Cody Rhodes. It's a shame, because I've said it on the show a million times. Met Cody Rhodes several times, talked to him several times. Good guy, loves wrestling fans. That's not disingenuous. That's not hypocrisy. That's a fact. But, man, he just comes off as a smarm. I just don't know why. Maybe it's just us. I don't know, Mike. Does he come off that way to you?
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, look. His brother, when he was doing the Goldust thing, didn't come off this smarmy as Goldust, you know. I mean, yeah, when Goldust was a heel, you know, and that's the thing. And look, I look at it like this. Cody Rhodes, I know at some point they're going to want Gunther as a champion, and Cody Rhodes may very well be not a temporary, but a transitional champion. You know, in terms of getting it on the Gunther, and then here's the deal. You get it on the Gunther. Gunther's a heel. That will allow Roman Reigns to come back as a face and take it from a heel.
And that could very well happen. That could happen. Gunther would have to be a short-term champion, though, because he can't use the mic. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens with Cody. I think after he wins, there'll be a surge of popularity for a little while. But then I think we've nailed this. I think it's going to get old. It got old in AEW when they started booing him, remember? So how's it not going to get old here? Now, on top of this, you have Solo Sikoa come out, and he is undefeated. And I hate the angle, you're not ready. What do you mean he's not ready? I thought this was the guy that the tribal chiefs had purposely sent to protect Roman Reigns, and he's not ready? Well, then who the hell is ready then? Why don't you send somebody that's ready? Thanks, elders. You sent somebody that wasn't ready to protect me. Thumbs up. I really thought the Usos were going to jump in early and protect Solo, much like Dominic protected Damian Priest. Didn't happen. Solo was pinned. I get it. You got to show Cody Rhodes beating somebody substantial so that Paul Heyman can freak out. And you know, I get that, I guess. But at least protect him a little bit. At least have something happen in which he's distracted by – he was partially distracted by Owens and Sammy, but it wasn't enough protection. Do something that would definitely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, protect him. He didn't really do that. And the biggest pop of the night comes from Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn coming out to make the save. I still say I will not be surprised if Jey Uso costs Roman Reigns the title. I still say Jey Uso is two steps off a turning face. We'll see what ends up happening with that. The whole night kind of felt like it lacked a little star power. We didn't see Roman. We didn't see Charlotte Flair. We didn't see Bianca Belair. John Cena didn't even have a taped interview. So I'm sure Friday they'll pull out all the big guns and everything. But what we did see was okay. You know, it wasn't my favorite Raw. I was really impressed with the 8-man tag match. I thought it was going to be garbage, and it wasn't. Cody Rhodes always at least. I'll give him credit for one thing. Every single match Cody Rhodes has had so far, he gives his opponent, whether they're a jabron, sort of, or whether they're top build, he gives them a lot of offense. He doesn't job anybody out. He doesn't squash anybody. Cody always gives the other guy a lot of offense. But, man, I just wish that you'd have left Solo alone a little bit and said, I don't think we're going to touch his undefeated streak just yet. There are ways we can work around this match and still get the same message across and not necessarily have a pin on Solo, caller. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you think about that? I get why they had him pin Solo, but was this the time?
No, it wasn't the time, and that's the thing. And, you know, and also with Cody, I'd also like to see him add a few more moves to his repertoire, you know. But, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, but, yeah, it's... And we know where this is probably heading, and we've said it several times with this whole Jey Uso thing. First it's going to be Jey, then it's going to be Jimmy, then it's going to be Solo, and possibly even Paul Heyman at one point, to where Roman has nobody, right? So
that's where it looks like it's going.
Yeah. So we'll see, and we know that Roman's going away for a while, probably after WrestleMania. So, and this whole storyline with who's going to turn next and when they're going to turn is going to take a while. So, in the interim, when Roman's gone, that's when they're going to run this whole, Jimmy turns, Jey turns, and Solo turns.
That's what I would imagine, yeah. I'm hearing maybe 5 months, 5-6 months. That's a long time. It's a long time. So they're going to have to come up with some storylines that's going to interest people. All in all, it was an okay Raw. I mean, I'm not going to give it a bad grade. I don't think it was horrible. They called it a WrestleMania Raw. The one thing that really, I guess, disappointed me was, I guess we now know for sure that Bray Wyatt's not in WrestleMania because Bobby Lashley all but said he's in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. All but said it. I'm going to give this a B-. It was okay. Tom, I felt like they could have done a little more. If you're going to call it WrestleMania Raw, I think you could have done a little better job.
Yeah, it really lacked the star power of a go-home WrestleMania Raw. It didn't – there's a few things that spoke to me. The Dominic segment, the 8-man tag, and the Chelsea Green promo, which was great. It made me laugh out loud. Those were all entertaining to me. Those all had good impact. The other things like the demon angle with Finn Balor and response to Edge, nobody cares. And the Solo Sikoa thing getting pinned, I think they jumped the shark with that. It was a decent Raw. Other than those, yeah, those are really my only complaints. But it was a decent Raw. Other than that, so I definitely I'm going to go with the B minus as well.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't terrible. It just I don't know. As far as the the Demon Finn Balor thing, again, you just got to get him away from everybody else and the rest of the Dominic and Rhea and all that away. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I'm gonna give it a B as well. You know, it was not great, was not bad, was just okay, I guess. You know.
Yeah, it felt like it could be better, Mike, especially for WrestleMania Raw. But at least we learned one thing: we learned Bobby Lashley's in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, and I guess Bray Wyatt's out of WrestleMania.
Yeah. I got to give it a B minus as well. And you know what? I don't know who else is in the Battle Royal, but if they were going to bring in Cardona and bring him in WrestleMania, that would be a perfect place to bring him in, would be the Battle Royal, you know, and maybe have him last long in there and stuff like that. But we'll see what happens with that, because I'm sure somebody like, if they don't do that, somebody like Bobby Lashley would win that thing. I'm sure. So.
You would think, but I have this weird feeling that's where Bray Wyatt might show up in some way, shape, or form, cost Bobby Lashley. Maybe he's going to appear on the Titantron or something, and Lashley's going to get distracted and thrown out. We'll cover all that on Friday, but I'm a little disappointed that he's actually not a part of it. I do think we'll see some surprises, and we'll talk about that a little bit more on Friday, too. I'm hearing we may see more people than we think. AJ Styles is close to making his return, if not ready. Randy Orton is close to making his return, if not ready. Matt Riddle may be around the corner. So you got some of the cavalry coming in and coming back. It should be interesting to see what happens. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here on Friday with our WrestleMania Night 1 prediction. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.